This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us today. Experts say that the African diaspora plays an important role in shaping and advancing the continent's film industry by leveraging their connection to their resources, heritage, and global markets. They work as producers, directors, writers, and actors, often taking the lead in financing and managing, also consuming films like the recently released feature film, Redemption Games.
Is this a joke?
What did you do?
I didn't do anything.
So we are trapped.
You saw that? Merry Christmas.
That is the trailer of the movie Redemption Games. The feature film was directed by Mahmoud Job, a Sierra Leonean film director. It was shot in the US, but features a cast of Sierra Leonean actors. I caught up with Mahmoud Job at the film's premiere in a Maryland suburb of Upper Marlboro.
So, my name is Mahmoud Job. I'm a Sierra Leonean. I've been in the United States for about 12 years now. I'm a filmmaker. I made the movie titled Redemption Games. It's premiering today at the Public Playhouse in Hyattsville, Maryland. So a little bit about the movie. The movie came about because I wanted to make a film that I will not spend a lot of money on. So I challenged myself to make a story that is told predominantly in one location, because usually that's the best you can do when you don't have a lot of money. So I wanted to make a film that would still look good, that would still have quality, that would still be interesting to audiences, but at the same time, I would not be spending a lot of money on. So I made Redemption Games. I hope that people will my takeaway, at least for people that are watching, is that whatever your dreams are, the only person that is stopping you from achieving it is you. Whatever you can use to achieve your dreams, use it. Whatever you have in your possession, whatever you do have currently, is enough. And Redemption Games, I think, proves that you can use what you have to achieve what you need. Mm-hmm. You don't need more than what you have.
Okay. So you're talking about the challenges of production in terms of resources. Right. Resource-wise, being able to produce a piece of work like this on a shoestring budget. Mm-hmm. Right. What does it take to do that?
It takes perseverance. It takes a lot of no's. And you plow into a lot of yeses, a lot of friends that are helping you, a lot of people that believe in you, that help you through the process. For me, that's what it takes. And me just believing that even though I don't see the future, I can still achieve it.
So you'll be premiering this in Sierra Leone soon. But why was it important for you to do that? Why is it important that you premiere this, you show this to an audience in Sierra Leone?
Well, first of all, Sierra Leone is where we have the biggest support. You know, a lot of people know us, pretty much the whole country knows there, and it's going to be a sold-out event, so everybody's waiting to see this movie from Sierra Leone. We also wanted to show Sierra Leone because Sierra Leone is one of the developing countries that is trying to get back from a lot of poverty, a lot of rebel war, a lot of, you know, issues. So showing a movie there that we are here in the United States, we are doing our bit, you know, so that I hope will inspire other Sierra Leoneans to get up and pick up this mantle so we can all make amazing things together.
That was Mahmoud Job, director of the film Redemption Games. At the premiere, I also caught up with radio personality and veteran actor David Vandy, who is originally from Sierra Leone. David is considered one of the most influential voices in the Sierra Leonean diaspora entertainment industry, both as a stage performer, film actor, and producer. I asked him how this moment feels for him.
To be honest, Jackson, it makes me feel accomplished, as if this is something that I've been aiming at. I've been talking to my people that we have to come together. We have to do it ourselves. Because if we keep depending on others all the time, it's like we'll forever be dependent on them. So we have to make sure we do our own. And so for me to be here today with a film of an entirely Sierra Leonean cast makes me feel so proud of my country and the industry. It shows that we have taken another step higher. You know, so I am really, really very pleased.
Hawana Tukamara, a Sierra Leonean American film producer, says that her journey into the world of filmmaking began unexpectedly, but has since evolved into a passionate mission to promote Sierra Leonean films in the U.S. market. As the executive producer of Redemption Games, she managed budgets, assembled a talented cast, and ensured the film's successful distribution and marketing. She tells me that by targeting the African diaspora, filmmakers create opportunities to showcase Africa's rich talent, while the diaspora community's patronage validates the industry's relevance and drives its growth both on continental and global stages.
What is your role as an executive producer or producer for people who don't know what the movie making process entails?
The producer is the person who makes sure the movie gets made, stay on budget, distribute it, market it, and hire the actors and actresses.
Okay.
The whole nine yards.
Gotcha. So how was your experience working on this movie, Redemption Games? It was your first film as a producer?
Right, it
was. How was that for you?
It was a great experience. I mean, I never thought I would be a producer. So this was, you know, very interesting and challenging. And I'm happy I did it because it really opened my eyes to so many other things that I need to learn and implement in my own businesses that I do as well. So it was very good experience.
Now, you were telling me how the film director approached you based on an event that you were working. So you're not into film before.
Correct.
Right? Were you a little intimidated by the fact that you're about to embark on this new thing, you know, new career?
The funny thing is I really wasn't. Yeah. So when he told me, for some reason, I really got excited and I started doing my own research. I was like, oh, this is right around my alley. You know, I love doing the paperwork, making sure everything's intact, because that's one thing I've learned in business. It's like you better make sure your paperwork and everything is intact. You stay on budget, which is very challenging to do with a, you know, very low budget.
On a string budget.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So what did you learn about, were you interested in film in the beginning? Was that something that you've always been working on or following up on or studying up on, especially when it comes to the Sierra Leonean film industry?
Not so much as the producing style being part of it. It's more of like I love movies. I like different genres of movies, and I love supporting the community, the people that are doing the movies. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was nothing new or strange to be in that environment because, like I said, I enjoy movies. So
now, when I first met you a couple of weeks ago, you were at the screening of that film, Redemption Games.
Yep.
And there were many people from the local community that came out to watch the movie. What would you say is the role of the diaspora, the Sierra Leonean diaspora in supporting and growing the local film industry back home?
You said, what is the...
Their role.
Their role?
Yeah, what do you see as their role? What do you envisage as their role?
The role is to come support it and believe that Sierra Leone film industry is going to elevate. And I think there's no trust in the film industry because of past, you know, experience in the industry. So I feel like if Sierra Leoneans back home can come and see what we've put together in the direction we're trying to take the Sierra Leone film industry, I think it will kind of open up the eyes and get interested and hopefully bring investors, because that's a big part of filmmaking. You need investors because, I mean, you alone cannot do it. It's very costly. If you want quality, you want your movie to go global, and you can't do that with just doing low budget movies.
No. How did you get the actors? The actors mostly are based in Sierra Leone?
Two of them based back home.
And these are very well-known actors, right?
They are known for a reality show that they did.
Okay.
So the four main characters are part of a group back home called the Shukublai, and they were in a reality show together. And I believe it's like 10 of them, but they were the four that were they're very close friends.
Okay.
So that's where the idea came from the director, Mamu Job, seeing the picture of them and say, wow, I would love to put them in the movie.
right. And I see that you kind of limited the location to one location.
Right.
That's where you shot the film, I guess, for budgetary purposes, but also worked for the movie in itself. How did you convince them to be part of the movie?
Well, we told them we wanted all of them to be in the movie and what the movie was about, and they all loved the script. And that was a sold, because I don't think if the script was right, they would have agreed to it. And then what was an even bigger sell was the fact that they were going to do it with their friends.
Got you. Now that the project is done, obviously, you're doing screenings all over the U.S. and hopefully you're going to go to Sierra Leone. Produce yourself staying in the film industry?
Was absolutely.
This something that actually encouraged you to...
Absolutely, I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the entertainment world, so this is just an added bonus. And it's a motivation for me to learn so much more that I don't know, and I'm willing to do whatever I can to put Sierra Leone on the map, put... just expose us, you know, because I always tell people, I feel like sometimes Sierra Leone is an underdog, but we're not. It's just that we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the finance, there's so many things that we need, the right equipment to better ourselves, the exposure and the diaspora, you know, so all those things are important, and I'm going to do my best to make
sure. How big is the Sierra Leonean diaspora in the U.S.?
I believe it's pretty big.
Yeah.
And we're scattered
very
all
active.
Over. Yes, there's a lot of active people. There's a lot of people who are doing a lot of big things in the community.
And they come together for events and stuff.
They do, yes. Yeah. Absolutely, they do.
Yeah.
They do.
Why was it important for you in this, going back to the cast, that you have a local cast, like Sierra Leonean cast?
Well, we wanted to showcase Sierra Leonean actors in a movie to the global world, because the movie is not just for Sierra Leone, even though the whole cast and crew is from Sierra Leone. That's just what we wanted to sell to the public, that Sierra Leoneans are capable of doing great films.
Right.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Namibia's growing film industry is gaining recognition on the global stage, with local filmmakers and productions receiving acclaim for their unique storytelling and cultural authenticity. I recently spoke to Namibian filmmaker Perivi Kajavivi about his film Under the Hanging Tree, the genre-bending movie which made history as Namibia's first ever official submission for the Academy Award for Best International Feature at the 96th Academy Awards. Kajavivi tells me that the film draws from Herero mythology and the symbolism of the Umumborombonga tree in local culture, and was born out of the need to examine his country's historical legacy and its colonial past.
Let's talk about what inspired the story behind Under the Hanging Tree and how you were able to balance these elements of history, culture, and fiction in the film.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, the film started as, a desire to sort of look back and to try and make sense of some of our histories in Namibia, and to look at a difficult period, the colonial period, when Namibia was ruled by Germany, and we were under sort of German colonial rule, and the subsequent Herero genocide, which occurred between 1904 and 1908. My father's grandmother's sister was in that war and was injured and was shot and raised my father. She was really my dad's key maternal.
That's the Herero fighting against the German colonial.
That's right,
yeah.
That's right. So we grew up with those stories being passed down from her to my dad, to me and my siblings. So I'd always wanted to make a film that looked at that, but from our perspective of waking up to the past and making sense of it and digging and looking. So I just felt very early on I had to have a police officer at the center of this story, because detectives like to dig and kind of investigate and look and dig up the past in this kind of way. So it felt appropriate. So we developed it then initially as a TV series, then as a film, as a way to kind of, on the surface, you think as an audience you're walking into a film that has familiar genre tropes, and you know, there's a noir or crime detective element. But then it becomes something very different. It becomes a film where somebody coined the phrase, you're trying to decolonize the form.
Decolonize the form.
Which we were trying to do in a way. So decolonizing film, partly with the form of it, so it doesn't...
You append the whole like linear or non-linear structure
exactly,
of the film.
Exactly. Yeah. So you think you're watching something that is a traditional cop film,
yeah,
and then it becomes a bit of a slow film, and it becomes a bit experimental and artsy. But then there was, you know, to center some of the early filmmakers from West Africa, like Suleiman Cisse, this idea of centering the traditions of the community and the rituals over narrative and plot.
Mm,
so there are right. times when you expect, again, sort of certain narrative and plot, you know, tropes from Hollywood filmmaking, but instead you're watching somebody perform a ritual under a tree with fire, or you know, we use these really long slow takes, so you're forced to kind of watch the frame and you look in at the background and wait, you know, with kind of anticipation, is somebody going to walk into the frame? So there were these sorts of things.
It was not to build any kind of tension or anticipation. It was just your idea was to get people to actually stay locked into the...
Yes, well, both. The screening we did last night, somebody said in the Q&A, you trapped the audience both in because of that style of shot. And then we had the 4:3 kind of portraiture framing. So you don't have the widescreen. You don't let the audience kind of escape in the frame a little bit. So there were different sort of tactics employed to...
I love it.
...to center.
So... Let's talk about the title, Under the Hanging Tree. Yeah. What is the significance of the hanging tree? I know the tree plays a very important symbol in African, either African mythology, African traditions, African education, African culture. Everything is done under the tree.
Yes.
What is behind the title, Under the Hanging Tree?
Yes, well, that's exactly the premise. It was... knowing that these trees are so important in our culture, in Herero mythology, in our creation mythology, we understand this idea of us being born out of the roots of the tree and being born with the cattle. The Maasai in Kenya, they talk about falling from the sky with the cattle. We talk about coming out of the ground with the cattle. It's interesting, these two stories. So I was interested in that. So I centered tree under the hanging tree, but also this more troubling history of during the colonial period, many people we know were hung at the same tree that we revere because of the creation mythology. And it's a certain type of tree called a leadwood tree, which you find in central Namibia. So I was very struck by this idea of trying to dig up the past and make sense of where you come from and who you are. And you return to the tree, under the tree, and it's this place of creation and beauty and... but then also of death
and trauma.
And hanging and trauma.
Yeah.
And how do we resolve that? So that's really what the film is about. It's
absolutely
trying to resolve those things.
What role do you believe film plays in confronting or processing this colonial trauma, as we say, both for individuals or for communities like the Herero, where your people are from?
Mm-hmm. For us, I think we're just beginning to deal with it. We haven't found, some of the elders said in a screening in Namibia, you're just starting to talk about it, your generation. We don't know how to talk about these things. We don't know how to talk about not just the trauma, but also the beauty and the rituals. We don't know how to talk about the holy fire, the sacredness of cattle, our connection to the land, why these sites were so important, and then they were disrupted by this colonial war. So really, it's about trying to find language. Film offers us a unique way to access emotion and memory. And particularly with this film, we're dealing with the legacies, the echoes, the remnants. So it's how do you access that? Because it's not obvious. We don't walk through life day to day going about our dealing with our bread and butter issues, thinking about genocide or thinking about hanging trees. But the tree where somebody might be hanging a piece of laundry from or sitting under for some shade is not just shade. It's also, you know, this past, this trauma. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think film...
It carries a history of pain and trauma.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And it's not always clear or tangible. And we know these things are passed down in DNA, and we don't want that's really my motivation. I don't want my children to be raised with the same kind of traumatic legacy. How do we exercise it out of us? And I think film and play, that kind of creative intervention, allows us to access stuff like memory, trauma, remnants of this in a way that I don't think other things can. Mm-hmm. And I'm also conscious of not giving up all the power to politicians and to, you know, there are ongoing negotiations around reparations, which are historic. I don't know if they will reach an agreement, but ultimately I'm also, I think we're trying to say, well, we don't have to wait for these big solutions. We can make our own interventions with film and with other things. Mm.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. We are still chatting with Namibian filmmaker Perivi Kajavivi.
But the film is a first submission by a Namibian filmmaker for the Oscars. How does it feel to have your work represent the country on such a historic level?
It's great. We're very proud of that achievement. It's a very small film industry and community in Namibia, so there aren't many films. So it's an honor to be the first. I hope there will be more submissions. To clarify, we submitted it as Namibia's official submission to the best international feature category. I hope I'm getting this right.
Right.
In the Oscars.
It's very important to get the category right. Yeah.
Of course, they used to call it the foreign language.
Yeah, foreign language
best
film.
Foreign
yeah.
language film. Yeah. So we were very proud to be that official submission. We didn't make it to the long list or the eventual list of five nominees on the night, but it was still incredible, I think, to be included in now, that list.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, and congratulations for that. Namibian film or cinema is still emerging on the global stage. Mm-hmm. What would you say are some of the unique challenges, like filmmakers or storytellers like you, still face, and some of the opportunities that are available for young filmmakers that are hoping to, you know, to embark on this journey of storytelling?
Yeah, I think I'll be boring and say that the same old challenges apply, like funding, access to audiences, access to equipment, even in a sense, the sort of technology and gear. But it's never been easier, I think. It's all relative, of course, but just I really do have to just have a perspective here and remember there was a time when there were no films, no filmmakers.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, we've had a submission to the Oscars. We've had Namibians with making films that have been on Netflix and Amazon Prime and other big streamers and international platforms. So things have changed dramatically from when I was a kid, if I was to remember. Mm. I think one of the biggest things is film language. We're still, what is an African film, right? Even some of the old classics, there was pushback and criticism because many of the films would be edited in France, ultimately, even if they were shot in Africa by Africans. So what does it mean for a film really to be called African? And right. in a global world as well, where we collaborate and co-productions are the rule of the game and in the independent film industry for the most part. Mm. So what do you mean? Is it the money? Is it the identity of the filmmaker?
Or the story itself?
Is it the story itself? Mm. Where it takes place? Who's in it? Does it matter if I do my editing in Colombia or Sweden? Can it still be an African film? But more importantly, film language. What's an African film? Is it Nollywood? Is it the Nollywood aesthetic? What type of storytelling? Is it the commercial films coming out of South Africa that are all on Netflix? What is it? Is it an East African sensibility? Mm. West Africans taught us that film is linked to the griot tradition, where memory, wisdom keepers. Or is it a commercial medium? Or is it an artistic thing? Can I just be artistic? Mm. So the exciting thing for me, I think, as a Namibian, is watching that conversation evolve, right? And we are not penned into anything. Namibian film could be anything. It's not what I'm doing, it's what the combination of different things and, you know.
I feel like you were exploring some of these conversations in the film Under the Hanging Tree.
Right.
A genre-bending film, if I may coin the word.
Yes, exactly.
So as a filmmaker, what drives your passion? How did you start into filmmaking? Mm.
I'm just very curious, I think. I want to understand myself, the human condition, who we are, where we come from. All those sort of cliched things, I think. I also grew up very much on a diet of Spielberg and, you know, some of those Hollywood films where, yeah, it really stirred our imagination like and creativity. It's a shame you don't make films like that anymore.
What's the film that had the biggest, I guess, influence on you growing up?
Oh, there are many. 'Cause as much as it was like Close Encounters of the Third Kind or E.T., it was also, I remember Spike Lee's Malcolm X.
Absolutely. Like,
having a huge effect on me and seeing it and being like 10 or 8 years old or something like that. And, you know, and not, and really realizing for the first time, like, wow, you can tell a story like that. And of course, the story of Malcolm is incredible. But yeah, the way that he was, if you know a bit about the background of how he had to sort of go to Oprah and Bill Cosby and all these people to get finishing funds, how he wrestled the film away from Norman Jewison. But the audacity to make a 3-hour film about this black figure, it still seems amazing. Some of those films that Spike Lee got financed in the studio system in the 90s, Girl Six, about a black phone sex worker. How would you pitch that now?
Absolutely.
Even now, how would you pitch
even now,
that?
Yes.
And get it financed. Yeah, so yeah. Those films had an influence on me. I remember seeing Batman in the late 80s in New York City when I was like 5 years old or something. I don't know how I got in there because I'm sure it was like a...
What was that Batman at
PG-13, R rated.
Was it Keaton?
Michael Keaton, the first one. Yeah. You know, so many films. And then later I would discover African cinema, right? Because it's hard. Unless you're privileged or go to school or have access to resources, we grow up on a diet of Hollywood. If you dig, you will find your indie cinema, your European art house cinema. And if you keep digging, then you'll discover African cinema, maybe at the tail end, which is very hard to find on the continent, of course, right? And then I became deeply influenced by Tuki Buki and Jibril Mambeti.
Buki, absolutely. Many other, yeah.
Filmmakers.
Influenced Jay-Z too. And
That's right.
How would you describe Africa's... the state of Africa's film industry with the advent of streaming platforms like Netflix and many others, but also the technology. We were talking earlier about how, you know, the conversation is a little different these days in terms of accessibility to technology. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a small camera and able to be able to create a film that was $1 million budget back in the day. And you will find an audience through a streaming platform, whether it's on YouTube or, you know, TikTok, whatever it is. But in general, how do you see the future of the film industry and current state of it?
I'm very optimistic. Coming back to Mambeti, I think he said it's good for the future of cinema that Africa exists. And, you know, cue the kind of corny headline, Africa Rising. Africa.
Afropolitan.
Yes. We're here. We've arrived. And in that spirit, I think I see it in Namibia and still in the continent. There's a lot of that still of just look at me. I'm here, which is quite valid.
Yeah.
And sometimes not moving beyond that. You know, we're sort of in the Instagram phase of wanting to be looked at and to look at ourselves in being beautiful, which has its place, which is important. I think the next thing is maybe interrogating this question of a film language, which hopefully happens accidentally with people having freedom to play, and rather than, you know, oh, an African film has to
be held to these standards.
Absolutely. We don't want people being put in boxes.
Yeah.
That was Namibian filmmaker Perivi Kajavivi. He joined me in studio here at The Voice of America. And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to all of you for tuning in. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms at VOA Africa. We are also at VOA Upfront. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Have a great week ahead, Africa. Mali, Anna, Mali, Barigada, Faso, Mali, Yuan.